In a moment, I'm going to be presenting, which sounds better than reading, I guess, a sermon, which I found on the UUA Worship Web website. I thought it was extremely topical in my life, and I'm sure in many others, and also with our fellowship as we enter into the brave new world of Facebook. This deals with the concept of dealing with technology and gadgets and the like. And I'm going to read this sermon, but I've also got a few thoughts of my own that I'd like to interject. So in order to avoid some confusion, I thought of a visual cue that I could give you all. So when I'm going to speak and tell you my thoughts, I will remove my pretend glasses like that. Mainly because I've always wanted to do that. I thought that'd be fun. So here we go. This is called The Tao of the iPod by Anne Welsbacher. And she begins, gadgets, the downfall of a free society, electric litter paving an inexorable path to our culture's moral, intellectual, spiritual, and inevitable destruction. Now, if you were an American living in the 21st century, you likely have fretted over this topic or some variation on it. You might even have done more than just fret. Read stories online, emailed, podcasted, text messaged, Twittered, Googled, or pontificated on your cell phone, possibly while driving somewhere that you found with the help of MapQuest. Oh, you worry. Your kids can't do their homework without at least two electronic doodads playing simultaneously. Friends used to actually talk to you in person. Now mass email you slightly, shall we say, off-color jokes. And God knows what sorts of cancerous rays are toasting your brain cells every single day. But this isn't at the top of the list of any sensibly paranoid 21st century American. There are far too many other horrific dangers that beckon to us daily. From human warfare to the poisonings of our planet's great life-giving gifts, to the snuffing out of our collective thinking skills that the modern cults passing themselves off as media inflict upon us. But it's there, lurking below the surface. This vague worry that all these toys can't possibly be good for us. They're diluting art, reducing it to snappy tunes and pyrotechnic tricks. They're stealing away our reading time, replacing it with the popcorn of TV commercials. They're sucking us into the capitalist evils of American excess and damning us to live out golden days that will be consumed with the work of disposing all the junk we have accumulated and the now that corrodes in our basements. But wait, it occurred to me, she writes, while jogging along the wildflower-strewn bed of what once supported railroad tracks laid down for a form of transport nobody uses anymore, that I've heard all this before. She writes, I grew up in an academic 1970s household and remember parties at which people stood around imbibing white wine in martinis, ruining the ruination of our society's culture. A popular refrain of those days was, theater is life, film is art, television is furniture. I distinctly remember my father, she writes, who, if you press him on it, will acknowledge that he has a PhD, but who in general has little tolerance for anything even mildly effluent of pretension, saying to me that when someone furrowed an eyebrow at him and uttered that television is furniture bit, he liked to smile sweetly and reply, oh, I'll watch any old thing. He said this usually shut them up so he could go back to watching Bullwinkle or Hee-Haw or the WSU football game with a clear head. Now it's time for an aside. You know, I realized while reading the sermon this week that I, too, am a little, shall we say, hypocritical when it comes to gadgets, doodads, and the like. You know, if you ask me my thoughts on technology, you'd most likely get a long rant and rave about how we're dumbing down our society and we're all headed for Armageddon while driving our Hummers and texting along the way. But you know, once I was finished ranting, I'd probably go back to watching the Arizona Diamondbacks play baseball on my laptop and updating my Facebook status with witty one-liners about the awesomeness of Boise State football. Go Broncos! But at least I can admit it. So, back to the sermon. She writes, I like listening to my iPod when I jog. I set it on shuffle, and it takes me places that I didn't expect to go. Sometimes places I didn't particularly want to go. I know that Corey, who I'm assuming is her husband, programmed those songs onto its soulless, metal-encased trappings of zeros and ones, so the hapless little machine really isn't some deranged Hal taking control of my brain. But I swear, sometimes that iPod has its moods. Out of a selection of more than 1,000 tunes, it will decide to play 4 Warren Zevon songs in a row. Or it will devise a peculiar time warp around the Beatles, wrapping something from Paul McCartney's Wings around a song by John and Yoko, and then closing the set with George Harrison singing about all those years ago. How and why did it skip the group itself? The very reason those soloists even had their own songs. And isn't it lovely that Ringo hasn't changed a whit after all these years? Then I'm thinking about the mathematics of music and how I never would have expected the dissonance to work the way it did. And then, suddenly, I'm back at my own front steps, my ode to my blood pressure and endorphin needs for the day finished. And over that past hour, while jogging, I pondered art with the capital A, aging, failure, success, beauty, and death. Topics it never would have occurred to me to think about had I not stuck that little piece of cord in my ear. She writes, I remember younger days when I ran along the Mississippi, headphone free. I noted the leaves decaying into the muddy banks of the river, saw sunlight dappled by half-naked branches of birch trees. I contemplated words I had memorized from wisdom traditions, and even now when I recall them, they boomerang me back to particular bridges and bends in the river that guided me back home. I treasure those memories, and I am glad I had my holy moments one-on-one with the planet around me. But just as I love red and green, company and solitude, classical and bluegrass, I am glad for the unpredictable insights that I have found with both silence and my iPod. Now, certainly there are lessons to be taken from the past about the damning potentials of gadgets. In a New York Times article, Charles Morris wrote, the 1870s saw possibly the fastest sustained growth in American history. With the rapid spread of the railroads and the telegraph, new department stores and mail order catalogs pressured local producers with mass-produced goods, a precursor to the Walmart era. The productivity shock was comparable to that from the Internet in our own day. A technology reporter for a medical website noted an array of health hazards littering the short distance between you and your electronic toys. Working at night in front of a lit monitor can screw up your internal clock. Other potential hazards are repetitive stress injuries, obesity, permanent hearing loss, accidents from use of gadgets while driving, and even asthma, which might be triggered by some models of laser printers shooting out invisible particles that can lodge deep in your lungs. But most of the negatives about technology and new inventions don't live in isolation. As David Tierney notes in another Times article, quote, although new technology is often described as a Faustian bargain, historically it has involved a trade-off not between materialism and spirituality, but between individual freedom and social virtue, he says. Technology's victims have become familiar images in the media, online addicts who don't know their next-door neighbors, workers displaced by machines, frazzled parents, especially working mothers, too busy to spend time with their children. We contrast these pathetic figures with images of a happier past, when people still had time to read, contemplate the meaning of life, visit with their relatives and neighbors. But when exactly, he continues, were those days? Before the Industrial Revolution, the average person was short-lived and illiterate. Women's lives were consumed with domestic chores and continual pregnancies. Even after the Industrial Revolution, people still didn't have much time to sit around discussing the classics or communing with nature. In the middle of the 19th century, the typical man in Britain worked more than 60 hours a week with no annual vacation from age 10 until he died at about 50. Contrary to popular stereotypes, he continues, the work week has been shortening, and parents are spending as much time with their children as they did in the 1960s. Now, these children are less likely to live with two parents, which may be partly a consequence of technology that has made divorce and single parenthood less of an economic burden. Men and women today often can both support themselves, relying on machines to make clothes, clean house, and do most food preparation. But new technology is hardly the only cause of the traditional family's decline. And in any case, it's hard to get too nostalgic for the days when women had no choice but to stay in the kitchen, end quote. Now, another little aside, it's me talking. You know, thanks to the wonders of technology, ignoramuses like myself can watch shows like Mad Men on Netflix. Now, anyone under the age of 40 who disputes that the good old days of the 1950s and 60s were not quite so glorious for women should watch this amazing show. Let's just say the circumstances have improved drastically for women, both in the workplace and at home during the past 50 years. Okay, back to the sermon. She writes, technology's potentials reach beyond domestic aid, significant as this is. In his book, The Audacity of Hope, our president, Barack Obama, whose status as president exists at least in part because of the electronic devices of this century, describes a tour he took of the Google offices. He says, quote, a three-dimensional image of the Earth rotated on a large flat panel monitor. Do I sound like him? These lights represent all the searches going on right now, an engineer said. Each color is a different language. You can see traffic patterns of the entire internet system. Now, the image was mesmerizing, more organic than mechanical, as if I were glimpsing early stages of some accelerating evolutionary process in which all boundaries, nationality, race, religion, wealth, were rendered invisible and irrelevant, so that the physicist in Cambridge, the bond trader in Tokyo, the student in a remote Indian village, and the manager of a Mexico City department store were drawn into a single, constant, thrumming conversation, time and space giving way to a world spun entirely out of light. Obama's account is a striking illustration, I think, of the hopeful possibilities of a world sewn together in communication and industry. One example of the positive potential of modern electronic gadgets. But he continues, quote, then I noticed the broad swaths of darkness as the globe spun on its axis. Most of Africa, chunks of South Asia, even some portions of the United States, where the thick cords of light dissolved into a few discrete strands. End quote. Technological devices might offer all people a means to lift themselves up, but more importantly, I think, devices can show us more graphically than even a good oratory can, where our hard work remains in achieving true parity. When you think about it, the alleged evils of new contraptions, or at least our fears of their dubious evils, began plaguing us a long time ago. Talkies were supposed to spell the end of live theater, but got their comeuppance, since today the movie industry regularly bemoans its own exaggerated demise in the face of home DVD players. Radio, that heralded pastime of yore, ushered in the modern era of propaganda as a political tool. Cameras killed portraiture, and today are major players in museums in the creation of fine art. Today we tend to think of computer-like gadgets as the purvey of the young. There's that joke that centers around the idea of the computer so easy that a 10-year-old could manage it, but the elder is stymied because he doesn't have a 10-year-old in the house. Now, in my case, take off my glasses, that would be a 5-year-old named Michael. Back to the sermon, but in my life, she writes, and I'm guessing I'm not alone here, my parents discovered and embraced many gadgets long before I did. CT scanners, for instance, MRI machines, chemotherapy, IV monitors. cunningly designed needles that inject our anticoagulants so easily that even a 53-year-old could use it. For those of us circling ever closer to that generally shared human goal of getting old, I offer a purely pragmatic reason to try to embrace the kids' new gadgets. They're here, and they aren't going anywhere soon. And the kids, at least some of them, seem to understand how they can be used in positive ways. She writes, I was in a newsletter, e-newsletter class recently, and a younger classmate there challenged my tired old definition of a, quote, nerd. That cliched, pasty-skinned adolescent boy, chained to his computer monitor, capable of speaking only through a screen or ear device, going days without human contact, much less having any real social skills. Apparently, as she patiently informed me, there are actually human chat groups where friends who met online get together in person. They don't talk about devices or their favorite websites. They talk about life. They talk about love. Saturday's plans, the stuff of eternity. And they never would have met if they hadn't shared some esoteric, hyphenated, abbreviated, acronymated passion like Facebook or MySpace or podcast or Twitter. What gadgets like iPods have to offer us, in the end, is, like so much else in the world we inhabit, an entirely subjective matter, based not on what they are, but on who we are. Whether jogging, running a family, experiencing the companionship and loss of loved ones, or seeking your own spiritual path through life, the gadgets we create along the way are neither evil destroyers nor enlightened saviors. In the final analysis, what matters isn't the tools you use, but how you, as a person, choose to embrace, ignore, interpret, or flourish using them. Now I have one final aside here. This is me talking. You know, while reading this sermon this week, it really made me sit down and analyze the times in my life when I've experienced what you might call the holy. You know, music for me is a big one. You know, there are times when you put the CD in the player or tune into your iPod and you close your eyes and the notes just come in and fill you. And it just really seems to tap into something that might be considered divine. Movies is another one for me. I've watched countless scenes that have made me laugh, made me cry, made me think, you know, really lifted my heart. I think we can all relate, whether it's Gone with the Wind or Wizard of Oz or Battlestar Galactica. There are scenes in movies that really touch your soul. I've thought about some phone conversations that I've had with loved ones and how we really connected to each other via electric waves that I'll never understand. And to take that even further, you know, my friend Nicole Sylvester, who most of us know here at the Fellowship, her husband, Scott, has been in Iraq this last year. And almost on a daily basis, they're able to connect via Skype video conferencing on the internet. I mean, what a world. How amazing is that? And the list goes on. I've come to realize that despite my ranting and raving and rejections of technology and gadgets, that most of my most intimate, holy experiences have indeed involved, dare I say it, gadgets, technology. And I'm not the only one. You know, each day I watch my 5-year-old son, Michael, embrace this world of technology. In fact, the first wow gift that he ever received, the gift that really got a "you guys are awesome parents" response from the little guy, fittingly enough, was a brand new green iPod. You know, it was his very own gateway to the wonders of music, cartoons, movies, and race car video games. You know, he's since moved on to his Disney NetPal, which is a laptop for the little guys. And watching the smile on his face and the pure joy he feels using these devices has really made me think about some of my prejudices, made me change my tune. I've come to realize the truth behind Welsbarger's message this morning. Gadgets are indeed here to stay. So don't be scared. Don't be shy. Go ahead and join me. Embrace this brave new world. If you're like me, you'll discover wonders that make you laugh, make you cry, lift you up, and perhaps even lead you to a glimpse of the holy now and again. Hey, that's pretty good, right? Somebody give me one of those iPhone thingies. Genius boy here needs to put that on his Facebook page.